Today's reading of the Wall Street Journal is made available by the Talking Information Center in Massachusetts. Learn more at ticnetwork.org.
All right, time now to begin the reading of the Wall Street Journal. Here on the Talking Information Center, it is Friday, the 26th of April, 2024, and in studio, we have George and Steve.
Thank you, John Shea, and welcome to the Wall Street Journal. I'm here with my partner, Steve Verta. This is George Krein, and it's our great pleasure to read for you this morning. We'll begin, as we typically do, with the What's News column on the far left side of the front page of the journal. These are news briefs, probably all of which we'll get to as we move through the paper today. The U.S. economy grew at a sharply slower pace in the first quarter, and inflation topped Wall Street's expectations, dimming investor hopes for a quick Fed rate cut and sending the stock and bond markets down. The S&P 500, Dow, and NASDAQ fell 0.5%, 1% and 0.6% respectively. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note jumped to 4.706%. Google's parent said quarterly profit jumped, and it announced its first cash dividend, sending its stock soaring after months of scrutiny over an expensive push in artificial intelligence. Microsoft's profit rose last quarter as AI bolstered demand for its software and cloud services, prompting the company to spend heavily on infrastructure to accommodate the appetite for the technology. The NBA is advancing toward a series of major media deals, with Amazon and Google's YouTube vying for a new streaming package. Unilever backed its full-year guidance after reporting better-than-expected revenue for the first quarter on higher volumes. Hipgnosis, that's spelled H-I-P-G-N-O-S-I-S, agreed to an improved $1.51 billion takeover by Apollo-backed music company Concord, trumping an approach from Blackstone. Anglo-American is considering a sale of its De Beers diamond unit, according to people familiar with the matter. And finally, the federal government granted Micron Technology $6.1 billion to build two chip-making facilities in New York and one in Idaho. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, George. Stocks, bonds fall as inflation stiffens. Slowing growth, price pressures drive a broad-based decline in shares. Article by Gunjan Benjedi. Worries about slowing economic growth and sticky inflation drove broad-based declines across stocks and government bonds. A drop in shares of bellwether stock Caterpillar helped push the Dow Jones Industrial Average down more than 300 points, or 1%. The S&P 500 lost 0.5%. The tech-heavy NASDAQ composite shed 0.6%, pulled down by Facebook parent Meta Platforms. Fresh data released Thursday morning held two bits of disappointing news for investors. U.S. economic growth slowed more than expected in the latest quarter, while inflation is proving stickier than many investors hoped. This combination deflated hopes about the prospect of imminent interest rate cuts and drove Treasury yields higher. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note jumped to 4.706%, continuing a topsy-turvy week of trading for government bonds. It's becoming difficult to justify rate cuts this year, said Alessio De Longis, a senior portfolio manager at Invesco. Stocks dropped sharply after the opening bell and then paired some of those declines later in the session, with shares of energy companies, utilities, and some technology companies edging into positive territory. The communications services sector, home to several tech titans, was the worst performer, falling 4%. The group declined after Meta Platforms offered an unwelcome reminder that keeping up in the artificial intelligence race doesn't come cheap. The company, which also owns Instagram, saw its shares tumble more than 10%, its biggest one-day decrease since October 2022. International Business Machine shares fell more than 8%. While Microsoft dropped around 2.5%. Optimism about artificial intelligence has helped propel major indexes to records over the past year. Michael Smith, a managing director at Allspring Global Investments, said he expected greater scrutiny of how artificial intelligence investments are hitting companies' bottom line this year. 2023 was about the narrative. 2024 is about the numbers, Smith said. In the metals market, copper prices rose to $4.57 a pound, the highest settlement value since April 2022. In the oil market, Brent crude, the international benchmark, gained 99 cents, or 1.1% to $89.01 a barrel. Year-to-date Brent is up more than 15%. Front-month COMEX gold for April delivery gained $5.30, or 0.2%, to $2,329.80 a troy ounce. Year-to-date gold is up 13%. Bitcoin rose $718.80, or 1.1%, to $64,677.59. The cryptocurrency is up 52% this year. Overseas, the Stock Europe 600 fell 0.6%, and the UK's FTSE 100 rose 0.5%. At midday Friday, Japan's Nikkei 225 stock average was up 0.4%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was up 1.5%, and South Korea's KOSPI was up 1.1%. S&P futures were up 0.8%. George.
Thanks, Steve. In a companion article, growth slows, inflation firms. Stocks, bonds fall as price pressures make it difficult for Fed to cut rates now. It's written by David Uberti. The U.S. economy grew at a sharply slower pace in the first quarter, and inflation topped Wall Street's expectations, dimming investor hopes for a quick Federal Reserve rate cut and sending stock and bond markets down. Gross domestic product expanded at a 1.6% seasonally, and inflation-adjusted annual rate for the first quarter, the Commerce Department said Thursday, a pullback from last year's quick pace. That lagged behind the 2.4% projected by economists polled by the Wall Street Journal. Thursday's report also suggests inflation, using the Fed's preferred gauge, was likely firmer than expected in March. That gives investors another reason to give up on the idea that the Federal Reserve could begin slashing interest rates in the coming months. Typically, an underwhelming growth figure would boost hopes that the Fed will lower interest rates, but continued price pressures complicated that outlook. Inflation reading sparked a sell-off in bonds, sending yields on the 10-year Treasury note to 4.706%, their highest level since November. Stocks fell, meanwhile, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average sliding 1% or 375 points. Investors are pricing in a 19% chance that the Fed will hold interest rates steady through year-end, according to CME Group, up from below 1% a month ago. The report showed that U.S. consumers are still strong after years of hiring and wage growth. Spending on health care, insurance, and other services continue to grow, the Commerce Department said. Measures of underlying demand remain robust, leading economists to warn that the market was overreacting to an isolated data point. The domestic economy is doing well, said Eugenio Alemán, chief economist at investment firm Raymond James. Prices were a little bit over the top, but not by much. The slowdown in spending on goods, such as cars and gasoline, weighed down overall growth. Shifts in business inventories and international trade also slowed last quarter's expansion. But economists cautioned that those figures can vary widely throughout the year. A decrease in inventories can be really good news for the economy, said Teresa Gilarducci, an economics professor at the New School for Social Research in New York. That bodes well for a spurt of investment next quarter. It's way too soon to mourn for the economy, she said. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index rose 3.7% in the first quarter at an annualized rate, which was above expectations of a 3.4% increase. Economists had already revised up their expectations for price pressures in March after a separate inflation report earlier this month. The increase implies that price pressures were stiff again in March and that brisk inflation readings for January and February might get revised higher when the Commerce Department releases its March inflation figures on Friday. Plateauing inflation in recent months has exacerbated a knotty election year issue for President Biden, a Democrat, despite a promising economic outlook. It has also raised the prospect that inflation might settle closer to 3% than the Fed's 2% goal. Steve?
Dreams of rate cuts is slipping away. article by Nick Tamarios. Thursday's report on economic activity delivered the latest in a series of rude awakenings to investors and Federal Reserve policymakers who have held their breath in anticipation that lower inflation would allow interest rate cuts to begin in earnest this summer. Instead, Commerce Department data showed that, for the third straight month, inflation was proving stickier than expected after cooling in the second half of last year. Individual readings on growth and prices so far this year haven't been enough on their own to dramatically change the outlook for the Fed. But the cumulative effect of those serial disappointments has been notable. In particular, inflation data has consistently been firmer than expected, with recent months getting revised somewhat higher in subsequent reports. This trend has led investors and Fed officials to rethink whether rate cuts will be appropriate this year. I always say 1 month is no months, but 3 months, that's at least one real month, said Chicago Fed President Austin Goolsbee in an interview last week. Now that we're seeing, after 6-7 months of very strong improvement and close to 2% inflation, something that's well above that, we have to recalibrate and we have to wait and see. Policymakers and financial market participants began the year broadly expecting slower growth and cool inflation would allow the Fed to begin rolling back interest rate increases. But the opposite has occurred. Growth has proven more resilient than expected, and inflation has been surprisingly firm. On Thursday, the Commerce Department reported that gross domestic product expanded at a 1.6% seasonally and inflation-adjusted annual rate. But a broader measure of underlying demand ran closer to 3%, suggesting solid momentum. Meanwhile, inflation was stronger than expected during the first quarter. Core prices, which exclude volatile food and energy items, rose at a 3.7% annualized rate during the quarter and were up 2.9% from a year ago, according to Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index. Price data for March will be released by the Commerce Department on Friday. Thursday's report suggested that figures for January and February are likely to have been revised higher from already firm levels, and that inflation didn't ease and may have picked up in March, keeping the 12-month inflation rate around 2.8%. Kevin Burgett, an analyst at forecasting firm L.H. Meyer, said Thursday he now anticipated just one rate cut this year at the Fed's December meeting, after having recently revised his projection of 3 rate cuts beginning in June to just 2 beginning in September. We still think inflation is headed toward 2%. We still think the Fed is heading toward rate cuts, and we still expect them to start cutting this year. And we continue to see little chance that the next move will be a rate hike, Burgett wrote in a client note Thursday. But the risks have again shifted toward fewer cuts this year and a later onset. Markets largely agree. Investors in interest rate futures markets began the year anticipating 6 cuts, but now many anticipate just 1 or none. Bond investors sold U.S. Treasuries on Thursday morning, pushing yields on the benchmark 10-year note above 4.7% for the first time since November, when Fed officials hadn't yet signaled that they were done raising interest rates. George.
Alphabet sets first dividend as Google sales jump. It's written by Miles Krupa. Google's parent said quarterly profit jumped and it announced its first cash dividend, sending its stock soaring following months of scrutiny over an expensive push in artificial intelligence. Parent company Alphabet on Thursday also reported revenue in the 3 months through March rose 15% from a year earlier to $80.5 billion. That marked an uptick from the 13.5% rise in the previous quarter. Company highlighted cost controls that helped improve profit margins in the latest quarter. Big tech companies such as Google and Microsoft, which also on Thursday reported better than expected quarterly sales growth, are pouring money into building new data centers and chips for artificial intelligence. Alphabet recorded $12 billion in capital expenditures during the first quarter, a 91% increase from the same period last year. Chief Financial Officer Ruth Porat said investors can expect quarterly capital spending to be, quote, roughly at or above this level. The Google parent also posted robust profit, with net income in the quarter soaring 57% to $23.7 billion. Shares rose sharply after the results and the 20-cent dividend announcement, gaining more than 12% in after-hours trading on Thursday. Ad sales in the first quarter rose 13% from a year earlier to $61.7 billion. Sales in Google's cloud division rose nearly 29% to $9.6 billion. Profit was helped by ongoing cost cuts. Chief Executive Officer Sundar Pichai and Porat slashed additional jobs this month in the real estate and finance divisions, adding to a series of cuts that Pichai said would continue through this year. A Google spokeswoman on Thursday said the company made additional layoffs in the core engineering division, affecting about 200 employees. The spokeswoman said employees will be able to apply for open roles across Google. Investors are watching for signs of whether and how the tech giants are reaping new business from investments in AI programs that can generate text and images. Google, in particular, has faced persistent questions about its ability to defend its business model, which relies heavily on search ads as more people turn to chatbots for answers. Google has offered a few specifics about how AI is affecting its sales and profit. Multiple analysts asked Pichai on a call Thursday for more details on how AI is improving Google's financials. Pichai said Thursday the company is encouraged by an increase in search usage among people trying its new AI tools, but he otherwise provided little in the way of metrics on the technology's business impact. Steve?
And this is the Capital Account column written by Greg Ipp. U.S. economy reigns and trouble lurks. If you want a single number to capture America's economic stature, here it is. This year, the U.S. will account for 26.3% of the global gross domestic product, the highest in almost two decades. That's based on the latest projections from the International Monetary Fund. According to the IMF, Europe's share of world GDP has dropped 1.4 percentage points since 2018, and Japan's by 2.1 points. The U.S. share, by contrast, is up 2.3%. China's share is up, too, since 2018. But instead of overtaking the U.S. as the world's largest economy, the Chinese economy has slipped in size to 64% of the U.S.'s from 67% in 2018. In other words, despite trade wars, the pandemic, inflation, and societal division, the U.S. is gaining on its economic peers based on this admittedly simple metric. A caveat. These figures are based on current prices and exchange rates. Using purchasing power parity, which adjusts for different price levels across countries, the U.S. share of the world GDP would be lower, and that of big emerging markets such as China and India, much higher. But you don't pay for oil, iPhones, or artillery shells at purchasing power parity. Current prices and exchange rates better capture a country's relative economic power. Moreover, the U.S. has outperformed its peers, even after adjusting for inflation and exchange rates. Real U.S. economic growth has been much faster than Japan's or Europe's in the last 2 years. China has grown faster, but its economy is probably weaker than official data show. U.S. growth in the first quarter was low, at 1.6% annualized, in part because consumer spending remained so much stronger in the U.S. than abroad, causing the trade deficit to widen sharply. U.S. wages, adjusted for inflation, are roughly level with just before the pandemic, whereas they are lower in other advanced countries, the IMF found. This isn't to suggest Americans should somehow be content with stagnant real wages or high inflation just because people elsewhere are even more miserable. Still, it's worth studying the reasons the U.S. is outperforming. In a nutshell, there's an encouraging reason and a worrisome one. The encouraging reason is that structurally, the U.S. continues to innovate and reap the rewards, judging by big tech stocks and artificial intelligence adoption. The U.S. has done better at boosting productivity. That's output per worker. The second, more worrisome, reason for stronger U.S. growth are deficit-boosting fiscal actions, including former President Donald Trump's 2018 tax cut, bipartisan COVID-19 relief in 2020, and President Biden's 2021 stimulus. In fact, Washington continues to inject stimulus, hundreds of billions of dollars for veterans benefits, infrastructure, semiconductor manufacturing, and renewable energy. U.S. deficits have run roughly 2% of GDP higher than the IMF expected back in late 2022. They will be the highest by far among major advanced economies for the foreseeable future. In the long run, deficits inflate future interest bills and crowd out private investment. But they might be leading to dangerous imbalances right now. Deficits were justified when unemployment was high, private demand moribund, and inflation and interest rates low. None of that is true now. Instead, Biden and Congress continue to stoke demand in an economy that already has plenty. Through February, Biden has canceled $138 billion in student debt, and he has just unveiled plans to erase billions more, which directly boosts debtors' purchasing power. Of the $95 billion in aid to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel, just approved by Congress, $57 billion will flow back to U.S. producers in the form of more weapons purchases. It's one reason inflation, though down from a year ago, has stalled above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. The IMF thinks core inflation, which excludes food and energy, is a half percentage point higher because of fiscal policy. This, in turn, is keeping the Fed from cutting short-term interest rates. That, along with the flood of Treasury debt to finance the deficit, is pushing up long-term bond yields. Textbooks predict that a combination of tight monetary and loose fiscal policy will suck in capital from overseas and drive up the dollar. That has often precipitated financial crisis in emerging markets as exchange rates are devalued, governments default, and banks fail. The dollar has indeed risen this year. It has undermined emerging markets yet. Though Indonesia's central bank raised interest rates this week in response to a weakening currency, the strong dollar might destabilize the international economy another way, through protectionism. In 1971, high U.S. inflation and government deficits led to an overvalued dollar and trade deficits. After the Nixon administration imposed a 10% surcharge on imports, West Germany and Japan agreed to revalue their currencies against the dollar. In 1985, higher U.S. interest rates and budget deficits had driven up the dollar and trade deficit. At New York's Plaza Hotel that September, the Reagan administration persuaded Japanese and European officials to boost their currencies against the dollar. The dollar hasn't risen nearly as much as it did in 1985, yet similar frictions are emerging. The Biden administration badly wants to boost American manufacturing, in particular of electric cars, and is watching with dismay as China, aided by a weaker yuan, floods the world with cheap exports. The macroeconomic solution would be for the U.S. to stimulate its economy less and China to stimulate its economy more. Neither seems likely. And unlike in 1971 and 1985, when West Germany and Japan felt compelled to raise their currencies to mollify the U.S., their ally and protector, China feels no such obligation. The result will almost certainly be more protectionist pressure. Biden is already planning higher tariffs on China. If Trump returns to the White House, expect more tariffs and a push to weaken the dollar. The U.S. economy might still be king, but the reign won't be harmonious. George.
New EPA rules squeeze coal plants. It's written by Jennifer Hiller and Eric Niler. The Biden administration on Thursday issued sweeping new rules that crack down on power plant pollution and could force many of the country's coal plants to shutter unless they undertake costly upgrades. The rules, which will almost certainly be challenged in court, mandate strict controls on carbon dioxide emissions at existing coal plants and newly built natural gas plants. They set the stage for a significant infrastructure build-out to capture and dispose of CO2 emitted at such plants in order to comply. The changes come as the industry juggles the first upswing in power demand in two decades and a shifting generation mix. Solar and wind projects are being added to the grid, and utilities say more gas-fired power plants are needed for reliability and to replace coal. Some utilities say they need aging coal plants to stay online longer than expected. Existing gas plants, the backbone of the nation's power supply, aren't included in the new rules. The electricity industry is central to America's economic growth and competitiveness. These are the folks who keep the lights on and power our country forward, said Michael Regan, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency administrator. At the same time, the power sector is also a major contributor to the pollution that drives climate change and threatens public health. The EPA administrator said the new rules will cut 1.4 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions, roughly equivalent to the power sector's 2022 emissions, and move the U.S. closer to the Biden administration's goal of making the electricity sector carbon-free by 2035. Regan said the new rules will amount to a $370 billion in climate and public health net benefits over the next two decades. In 2035, the new rules would prevent approximately 1,200 premature deaths and 870 hospital visits, according to Regan. Carbon emissions from power plants make up around a quarter of the U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. Vehicles account for the largest source, about 28%. Separate EPA rules issued Thursday will limit pollution from power plant wastewater, regulate coal ash, and limit air emissions of mercury and other toxic compounds. Plants operating past 2039 would need to install carbon capture units before 2032 to comply with the new climate rules, according to EPA officials. A nationwide slowdown in permitting and constructing energy projects will test the utility's ability to deploy carbon capture and storage, which is mostly untried on a large scale. While the administration said the timelines for the power plant rules would give companies time to comply, National Rural Electric Cooperative Association Chief Executive Jim Matheson called the rules unachievable. It undermines electric reliability and poses grave consequences for an already stressed electric grid, said Matheson, whose organization represents many smaller utilities that operate coal plants. Steve.
Meta's spending unnerves investors. Capital expenditures this year will rival competitors' outlays, but advertising growth is slowing. That blank check investors wrote to Mark Zuckerberg seems to top out around $40 billion. That is the new upper end of this year's projected capital expenditures by Meta Platforms. The parent company of Facebook and Instagram raised its CapEx range for the year by 12% as part of its first quarter report late Wednesday, with the chief executive citing the need to boost investments in generative artificial intelligence. It is a big number. That is nearly double what the company has averaged over the past 5 years and nearly on par with projected spending this year by Microsoft and Google parent Alphabet, two much larger companies by annual revenue. Meta projected robust spending plans 3 months ago, which investors took in stride because the rest of the business was performing remarkably well. Those loss results fueled a big jump for its stock. Meta's 39% gain for the year to date ahead of its latest results was the sixth best on the S&P 500. But the latest report was a bit less impressive, with first quarter revenue of $36.46 billion, only narrowly beating Wall Street's estimate, and projected second quarter revenue falling short of analyst forecasts. That second quarter projection called for revenue to grow 18% year over year at the midpoint, also represented a notable deceleration from the 27% growth seen in the just-ended period. Meta's share price tumbled 10.6% Thursday. The world's largest social network isn't going to have any problems footing the bills. Advertising revenue jumped nearly 27% year-over-year to $35.6 billion for the quarter, while operating margins for the core advertising segment known as Family of Apps hit 49% in the first quarter, nearly 10 points better than the same period a year ago. The business of showing ads to a global audience of 3.24 billion users who check in daily is a lucrative one. Even with sharply elevated capital spending, Meta's free cash flow hit $12.5 billion in the latest quarter, up 81% year over year. But tech giants such as Meta, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon.com are now pouring billions into generative AI, with the revenue contribution either unclear or a long way off. Zuckerberg was at least candid on the last point, telling analysts on Wednesday's conference call, "I expect to see a multi-year investment cycle before we're fully scaled Meta AI, business AIs, and more into the profitable services I expect as well." Chief Financial Officer Susan Lee added that CapEx is expected to be even higher next year as we invest aggressively to support our ambitious AI research and product development efforts. That is great news for NVIDIA, the key supplier of the chips and computing systems necessary to power generative AI capabilities in data centers. but it is also a sign that tech investors more broadly might have to get used to bigger spending bills before they see the benefits. George.
U.S. seeks to speed power grid upgrades. It's written by Scott Patterson. Washington. The Biden administration is consolidating approval power over big power grid projects to speed upgrades and provide access to new clean energy projects. In a bid to fast-track grid infrastructure construction, the Energy Department is set to become the lead federal agency coordinating environmental approval of major transmission projects across the U.S., providing a one-stop shop as utilities race to meet rising power demand. The new process seeks to reduce the red tape grid planners faced as they sought separate approvals from a patchwork of federal agencies such as the Environmental Protection Agency, Interior Department, and the Agriculture Department. With its new authority, the DOE said it would implement a two-year deadline to issue federal permits and authorization for proposed projects, cutting the average time to site and permit projects in half from 4 years. This could speed development of big interstate projects that needed approvals from multiple federal agencies. If the DOE fails to meet the two-year deadline for project approval, developers can appeal to the president to issue permits. The new DOE powers were first approved by Congress in 2005, but never formalized and approved. The DOE also announced a plan to provide up to $331 million in funding for a major transmission project in the western U.S., that will help move wind energy from Idaho to Nevada and California. Construction on the 285-mile line is expected to start next year, the DOE said. Steve.
Southwest cuts airports amid Boeing delays, article by Allison Sider. Southwest Airlines is pulling out of some airports and cutting costs as it grapples with lackluster earnings and as delays of new Boeing planes dim its prospects for the year. Southwest said it now expected to receive just 20 new Boeing planes this year, less than half the number it had been expecting as recently as March, and well below the 79 total 737 MAX deliveries it had expected before that. Regulatory approval for a smaller version of the MAX, which Southwest has been waiting for, remains up in the air. The delays will thwart Southwest's growth ambitions this year, the company said Thursday, damping revenue and leaving it overstaffed and on the hook for higher costs. That is exacerbating the financial malaise that has weighed on the airline for several months. We aren't accepting that as our fate and are taking swift action against what we can control, said Chief Executive Bob Jordan during a call with analysts and investors Thursday. As it tries to improve its fortunes, Southwest is backtracking on part of its network expansion from a few years ago and rethinking its one-of-a-kind seating setup and boarding method. The Dallas-based airline had already planned to moderate growth in 2024, citing the need to tweak its network to better reflect demand. Its costs have crept up, especially after it struck expensive new labor deals with pilots and flight attendants. Some of the new markets the airline went into during the pandemic haven't been as successful as it hoped. Its profit margins have lagged behind some rivals. Retooling the airline's network and moderate growth isn't just Boeing, Jordan said. We're doing these things because we need to do those things to hit financial targets. Southwest had already said it would stop bringing on more pilots and flight attendants as it adjusts to the jet delivery setbacks. It said Thursday that hiring was virtually frozen, except for a small number of critical positions. It is offering voluntary unpaid time off programs to workers and expects to end this year with 2,000 fewer employees than it had at the end of 2023. Fallout from the mid-flight blowout of a door plug on an Alaska Airlines flight in January has continued to ripple for Boeing and its airline customers. Boeing faces heightened inspections and regulatory scrutiny after the near catastrophe. Under pressure to get a handle on quality problems, Boeing is building fewer of its 737 MAX jets, something that has complicated plans for several carriers. Southwest, which flies only Boeing planes, is one of the hardest-hit airlines. I won't downplay the challenges from the Boeing issue. They're a big deal, Jordan said. Redoing schedules and staffing forecasts is a costly effort that pulls people away from their work and creates a significant financial drag, he said. It's a tough situation for an airline that has often been able to make shrewd competitive moves during downturns. It tried to do the same during the pandemic entering some 18 new markets in 2020 and 2021, packing a decade's worth of growth into a few months while the industry was still reeling from the drop in travel demand. Some of those cities are among those being axed later this year. The airline said Thursday it was closing its operations at four airports in August: Cozumel International Airport in Mexico, airports in Bellingham, Washington, and Syracuse, New York, and Houston's George Bush Intercontinental Airport. Southwest announced the moves as it reported a quarterly loss of $231 million, or 39 cents a share. Its adjusted loss of 36 cents a share was slightly worse than the 34 cents analysts had anticipated. The airline reported record first quarter operating revenue of $6.3 billion, fueled by strong travel demand. But last-minute leisure bookings didn't meet the airline's expectations, and some of the airline's newer markets underperformed. The results are a contrast to rivals, including Delta Airlines, which earlier this month posted a first-quarter profit, and United Airlines Holdings, which said it would have earned money if not for the grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX 9. American Airlines Group reported Thursday that it lost $312 million during the first quarter, but its outlook for profit of $1.15 to $1.45 a share in the second quarter outpaced what analysts had been expecting. American shares gained 1.5% Thursday, while Southwest fell 7%. Southwest said it expected a strong summer, anticipating revenue hitting a quarterly record in the second quarter. But the airline is planning schedule reductions after the peak travel period subsides, shaving off some of its planned capacity expansions. Southwest was under pressure before Boeing's latest missteps threw it further off course. The airline spent much of last year restoring its reputation and rebuilding its operation after an epic holiday meltdown in December of 2022 that resulted in over 16,700 canceled flights, a congressional hearing, and a $140 million civil penalty. Southwest rarely exits airports and hasn't done so since 2019, when it dropped its operation in Newark, New Jersey, from its route map during a previous grounding of the MAX. It also said it plans to significantly restructure other markets, including slashing flights at Atlanta and Chicago's at O'Hare Airport. Southwest said it was studying changes it might make to better reflect customer preferences for seating. Rivals have benefited from opportunities to upsell customers on premium seating, something Southwest has missed out on. Some charges, like bag fees, are off the table, said Chief Commercial Officer Ryan Green. George.
Japan has much at stake in new rate era. It's written by Dave Sebastian. Japan's experiment with negative interest rates is over. The Bank of Japan raised rates last month for the first time since 2007, and it abandoned a years-long commitment to keeping government bond yields close to zero. Japan was the last country to abandon its negative interest rate policy, which became a popular and controversial tool in the wake of the global financial crisis. Japan is entering a new era with an economic recovery and the return to inflation laying the groundwork for a period of interest rate increases, albeit gradually. What will the end of negative rates mean for the country's economy, and how will it affect foreign investors who have flocked to Japan's booming stock market in the past year? Japan's stock market boomed last year, helped by a surge of interest from foreign investors, including Warren Buffett. They were attracted by Japan's improving economy, its weak currency, and an effort by the stock exchange to improve how companies are managed. The market has stumbled during the past few months, but the benchmark Nikkei 225 is still up around 13% so far this year. Will the end of negative rates also be the end of the rally? Usually, higher interest rates are seen as bad for stocks because they make it more expensive for companies to borrow and make bonds and savings accounts more attractive. But rates in Japan are so low, short-term rates are in a target range of 0 to 0.1%, that this logic won't necessarily hold, analysts say. Rate increases in Japan will accompany inflation, which will mean companies can raise prices to boost their profits, said Jasmine Duan, senior investment strategist at RBC Wealth Management. Higher interest rates will also help banks charge more on their loans, boosting their profits. Which stocks will do best? Goldman Sachs has pointed investors to a group of stocks it calls the Seven Samurai, a rough equivalent of the Magnificent Seven stocks that have surged in the U.S. Seven Samurai stocks have already helped drive the boom in Japan's stock market. The group comprises Advantest, Disco, Screen Holdings, and Tokyo Electron, which makes equipment used in the production of semiconductors, and automakers Toyota Motor and Subaru, and trading company Mitsubishi. Steve?
Signs of stagflation appear. Could it be that the not-so-stupid voters have been right about the economy? Democratic economists and their media friends have claimed for months that Americans aren't giving President Biden enough credit for a booming economy. The latest growth data released Thursday hinted a reason. There's less boom than meets the spin. Gross domestic product grew 1.6% on an annual basis in the first quarter, down from 3.4% the previous quarter. This is the weakest performance for the U.S. economy since the undeclared recession in the first half of 2022, and it's a noticeable softening from 4.9% growth in the middle of 2023. It's good news that the U.S. isn't flirting with recession despite the surge in interest rates. But the details of the GDP report offer plenty of explanation for why voters are less than comforted by White House assertions of prosperity. Consumer spending continued as a bright spot, increasing 2.5% and contributing nearly 1.7 percentage points to GDP. Imports, which subtract from GDP but point to a strong domestic demand, also increased. Investment is a different story. More than half of the contribution from investment to GDP came from housing, which many economists consider to be a form of consumption. Investment in business equipment grew, but at a relatively modest 2.1%, which feels especially anemic since equipment investment has fallen in four of the last eight quarters. Much of what non-housing investment there is may result from government subsidies, which means no one should assume it will contribute to productivity growth or future GDP gains. State and local government spending was another of the strong points in this report, but that also isn't a source of future productivity gains. It's possible that slow business investment weighs more heavily on the public mood than economists assumed. Americans can tell whether their employers appear to be investing in the future and whether they feel secure in their jobs as a result. The quarterly report also showed a reversal of progress against inflation. The personal consumption price index rose 3.4% in the quarter after three quarters below 3%. This reinforces the rebound in consumer prices in the last 3 months that have caused the Federal Reserve to delay its anticipated reduction in interest rates. Slower growth with rising prices is a sign that stagflation, a political killer. Inflation-adjusted hourly earnings have clawed back some of their declines after the inflation of 2021 and 2022, but they remain below the level when Mr. Biden took office, $11.11 in constant 1982 to 1984 dollars now, compared to $11.40 then. Only sustained business investment and productivity growth can turn this around, and sustained isn't the word that jumps from the pages of this GDP report. The economy keeps growing despite the headwinds of the Biden administration's many and varied regulatory assaults on private business. That's a testament to American ingenuity and entrepreneurship, as well as advances in technology, AI. But all of this is a long way from broad-based prosperity, which is what voters are trying to tell the political class. George.
Anglo-American considers sale of diamond unit De Beers. Mining giant had talks with potential buyers separate from BHP's offer. Written by Julie Steinberg, London. Anglo-American is considering a sale of De Beers, its storied diamond unit that has recently struggled, according to people familiar with the matter. The mining company, which itself received a takeover approach from rival BHP earlier this month, has in recent weeks held conversations with potential buyers for De Beers, including luxury houses and Gulf sovereign wealth funds, the people said. Anglo has signaled to potential suitors that it's open to offers, according to the people. The discussions are at an early stage, some of the people said, and a valuation hasn't been discussed. An eventual buyer might be a combination of a luxury house and a financial investor, one of the people said. The names of potential bidders couldn't be learned. London-listed Anglo said Thursday it had received a $39 billion all-share offer from BHP, contingent upon it spinning off shareholdings in two South Africa-listed units, Angloa America Platinum and Kumba Iron Ore. The potential deal could reshape the global mining industry. Under the takeover proposal, De Beers would be included in a potential deal, but BHP said it would review that business after the acquisition is completed. Anglo's discussions about selling the diamond unit are believed to have been separate from that takeover bid. Anglo has been conducting a review of its assets as lower commodity prices have ripped across the industry, prompting production cuts at the miner. Steve.
Nestle's sales slow on weak demand. Article by Dominic Chopping. Nestle's organic sales growth slowed sharply in the first months of the year as consumer demand remained weak, particularly in North America, while supply chain disruptions continued to hold back volumes. The Swiss maker of Kit Kat chocolate bars and Nescafe coffee said organic sales rose 1.4% in the first quarter, missing a company-compiled consensus of 2.9% and compared with 9.3% a year earlier. Overall, reported sales fell 5.9% to 22.09 billion Swiss francs, equivalent to $24.14 billion, just shy of the company consensus of 22.37 billion Swiss francs. But it maintained full-year guidance ahead of an expected improvement in volumes. The company began easing the pace of price increases in the quarter after it acknowledged earlier this year that the unprecedented inflation seen over the past couple of years had turned many customers away and hit demand. Like other many packaged food producers, Nestle raised its prices to pass on higher costs, lifting them by an average of 7.5% last year, which pushed some shoppers to move to cheaper store brands or remove certain goods from their shopping list altogether. It raised prices by 3.4% in the first quarter on average. Nestle said Thursday it is seeing significant pressure from lower-income consumers in the U.S., where price increases over the past 2 years and the reduction of the U.S. supplemental nutrition assistance payments from the second quarter last year significantly reduced consumers' purchasing power. That resulted in some weakness all throughout the second half of last year, and we saw that continued weakness now in the first quarter of this year, Chief Executive Mark Schneider said Thursday. However, the U.S. benefits from strong job markets with continued income increases, so as inflation continues to ease, people will essentially restore and recover when it comes to their purchasing power, and the company's premium segment continues to do well, he added. As prices have risen, sales volumes have fallen, and Nestle has made a recovery in volume growth one of its priorities this year. George.
Unilever's revenue jumps as sales volume picks up. It's written by Michael Susan and Ian Walker. Dove soap owner Unilever backed its full-year guidance after reporting better-than-expected revenue for the first quarter on higher volumes that were boosted by its power brands. The Anglo-Dutch consumer products company, which also owns brands such as CIF and Domestos cleaning products, continues to expect sales to grow 3 to 5% this year and a modest improvement in operating margin, both on an underlying basis. Unilever on Thursday said quarterly revenue rose to 15 billion euros, equivalent to $16.05 billion from the 14.75 billion reported for the same period a year ago. Underlying sales growth was 4.4% on year, beating the 3% forecast by analysts. Growth was driven by volumes that rose 2.2%, beating a consensus for a 1.2% rise. Unilever said that power brand volumes rose 6.1% with strong performances from Dove, Knorr, K-N-O-R-R, dry soups, I think, Rexona, and Sunsilk as consumers trade back up to premium brands. Unilever's volumes returned to growth in the fourth quarter of 2023 for the first time in 2 years, when consumer goods companies started to lift their prices to pass on the inflationary pressures to consumers, often sacrificing their sales volumes. Unilever said in March it plans to separate its ice cream division, which also makes Magnum, Walls, Breyers, Talenti, Popsicle, and Klondike, into a standalone business ending more than 100 years in the business. It said the business, listing the business as a separate entity is the most likely outcome. A sale is also a possibility. It also said that 7,500 jobs would be affected as part of a restructuring program aimed at saving 800 million euros over the next 3 years. The plan is the latest in a string of moves by Chief Executive Hein Schumacher to simplify Unilever and boost growth at the company, which analysts say has underperformed in recent years. Steve.
What is TikTok worth? It's a mystery. Article by Raphael Huang and Wilan Soon. Singapore. Now that President Biden has signed legislation forcing the sale of TikTok U.S. operations, any potential deal raises a big question. How much is the popular video sharing app worth? Those asking have some huge and widely varying numbers to consider. One suitor has suggested $20 billion as a starting price for the U.S. operations. Executives at TikTok parent ByteDance have previously considered TikTok's global operations to be worth about half of the Chinese company's overall value, which would put it above $100 billion, according to people familiar with the matter. Settling on the exact value will be difficult because the tech industry has never seen a sale like this before, and there are several unknowns. A big factor is what would come with the sale. Would it be the whole international business, and its more than 1 billion users, or just the U.S. operations with 170 million users? Would TikTok's secret sauce, the addictive video personalization algorithm that China has signaled it won't allow to be sold, be included? Another question hangs over how attractive TikTok's U.S. business is, as its once dizzying growth slows and Instagram rises as a rival. It will likely take months or more to settle on a sale price, if it ever comes to that. President Biden on Wednesday signed the legislation after Congress approved the bill in recent days. TikTok is preparing to sue on free speech grounds to stop the bill from being implemented. The legislation gives ByteDance up to a year to find a suitable buyer or face a U.S. ban. Further complicating a potential sale is that ByteDance's founder, Zhang Yiming, could theoretically let TikTok be banned in the U.S., though outside investors have a say too. Zhang owns 20% of ByteDance, according to the company. Those super shares have given him larger voting rights. Roughly 60% of ByteDance is owned by global institutional investors, including Carlyle Group, General Atlantic, and Susquehanna International Group. The remaining 20% is owned by company employees. So far, public declarations of interest in buying TikTok have been limited. Kevin O'Leary, chairman of O'Shares ETFs and star of the TV show Shark Tank, said he was putting together a bid valuing it between $20 billion and $30 billion without the algorithm. Former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has said he was forming a group to buy TikTok, and Bobby Kotick, the former chief executive of video game publisher Activision, also has approached Zhang, the Wall Street Journal has reported. Should Zhang and other shareholders agree to sell, a starting price from ByteDance's perspective would be well over $100 billion. Executives at ByteDance last year said TikTok could be valued at as much as half of ByteDance's valuation, according to people familiar with the matter. In December, closely held ByteDance offered $160 a share to buy back shares from shareholders, telling them it implied a valuation of $268 billion, the people said. Other investors think ByteDance is worth less. In private equity markets where ByteDance shareholders sell their stakes, the prices were lower than $130 a share, according to data from Rainmaker Securities, a private equity brokerage. That would value the Chinese tech giant at less than $215 billion. There is also no consensus that TikTok is actually worth half of ByteDance. Some investment banks and investors are valuing TikTok at five times its advertising and live streaming revenue, according to people familiar with the matter. Last year, TikTok's revenue from advertising and live streaming, its main revenue success sources, was about $22 billion, people familiar with the matter said. That suggests TikTok could be valued at $110 billion. George.
Micron gets $6.1 billion to build plants. Government grant is latest award from CHIPS Act to spur domestic production. It's written by Ben Glickman. Micron Technology is receiving up to $6.1 billion from the federal government to build three chip-making facilities the latest award from legislation meant to boost chip production in the U.S. Government grant will fuel up to $125 billion in investment by Micron in New York and Idaho over the next 20 years, U.S. officials said Thursday. About $50 billion of that will come by 2030. Micron plans to build a megafab, or a collection of massive chip-producing facilities in Clay, New York. The government funding will go toward building the first two of four facilities that are expected to have chip-producing space equal to almost 40 football fields. The company initially announced its plan for a New York facility in 2022. It said at the time it expected the megafab to be the largest semiconductor fabrication facility in U.S. history. Steve?
Toyota puts $1.4 billion into Indiana facility as part of an EV push. Article by Sabella Ogea. Toyota is making a $1.4 billion infrastructure investment in its plant in Indiana to further support the company's electrification efforts in the U.S. The automaker on Thursday said that the additional financing comes as Toyota prepares to assemble a new three-row battery electric sport utility vehicle in that facility and will bring 340 new jobs. Toyota employs more than 63,000 people in North America, of which 7,500 are based in the Indiana facility, where the company has so far invested $8 billion. The investment will also add a new battery pack assembly line using lithium-ion batteries supplied by a $13.9 billion battery manufacturing plant located in North Carolina, which is expected to begin production in 2025. Since 2021, Toyota has made investments of $18.6 billion into its U.S. manufacturing operations for its electrification push. The Japanese company's latest financing efforts in the U.S. follows an additional $1.3 billion investment at Toyota's flagship Kentucky facility to produce a separate three-row battery electric SUV for the U.S. market. George.
Amazon, YouTube seek NBA streaming deals, written by Joe Flint and Isabella Simonetti. The National Basketball Association is advancing toward a series of major media deals with Amazon and Google's YouTube, vying for a new streaming package, and NBC Universal trying to grab one of the main TV deals held by Disney's ESPN and Warner Brothers Discovery's TNT. Interest is high in the league's next round of packages, which kick in after the 24-25 season. Disney, which pays around $1.6 billion a year for TV rights, and Warner, which pays about $1.2 billion a year, are in discussions over a new pact, calling for them to pay substantially more while airing fewer games than they do now, say people familiar with the conversations. The robust pricing expected in the deal shows how valuable live sports are to traditional media companies at a time when cord cutting is shrinking overall TV viewership. Thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to join us again next week for more editions of the Wall Street Journal.
This recording was made available by TICnetwork.org.